Mental Health Monday
on Radio City Talk
with Mick Coyle.
Tackling the stigma.
Radio City Talk.
Welcome to another edition of Mental Health Monday. This week we've got a special investigation into work which is going on in schools, both in Liverpool and on the Wirral, in regard to protecting young people against some of the worst effects of modern life and the issues that they're facing, and protecting their own mental health as well. In part two of the programme, we're going to be hearing about how Liverpool has become a trailblazing city, of an official term, in regard to a new programme which will be kicking in as a result of a vote which went through the council on Friday. First and foremost, though, we're going to be hearing about a programme called The Blues Programme, which is taking place in the Wirral. And we've got two guests in the studio from Action for Children. We've got Leslie Stopforth and Rachel Ward. Leslie, Rachel, thank you both for your time. Great to see you. Thanks for coming on the programme.
Thank you for inviting us.
It's good to hear that there's a lot of things going on in schools in this part of the world, right across Merseyside. And we're going to be hearing about the great work that you guys are doing. First and foremost, Rachel, can I ask you about The Blues Programme? Tell us about the idea behind it.
Yeah, of course. So the Blues Programme, it gives young people a toolkit to build good mental health. It's the first UK programme and it's been funded by the Royal Mail. We're in 8 locations across the UK at present and we're working with 13 to 19-year-olds. It's a CBT, so cognitive behavioural therapy style programme. But it looks at using activities, engaging in the community, rewarding yourself as well as doing things for others. It builds self-esteem, confidence, and it's done through learning skills over a 6-week period.
So where are you making that connection with those young people? Is that within a school environment?
It is, yes. So the funding is to be in schools. So we are in, as I say, 5 schools on the Wirral at the moment. We've worked with 123 young people. It takes a lot of effort from the schools as well. They put a lot of effort in, which is great, because obviously the young people have to take the time out of the lessons to come to the programme. But it's seeing great results, and the schools are seeing great results, improved learning, improved confidence.
Give us a clue about what the interaction is that you have with the children. What is it that they're picking up? What sort of things are you flagging up with them about mental health and their own well-being?
Well, the programme itself, it's done through a questionnaire. It's not referral-based. So every young person in a year would be given a questionnaire, and from that we can identify the young people suitable for the programme. It identifies low mood, anxiety, depressive symptoms. So we're already highlighting that by inviting them onto the programme. And then through that, it's what the young person brings. It's them telling about their lived experience, what's going on for them day to day, and the things that they're struggling with day to day. There's a lot of peer-to-peer support within the group, and they help each other. So as the facilitators are there to do that, to facilitate the progress that the individual can make for themselves.
And in regard to that, you know, when we talk about depression, anxiety, stress, and so on and so forth, How do you put that across or introduce those ideas to young people who might not have a clue that actually it's a particular thing that they are suffering with or from, that to them, because they're young, it just feels like, you know, everyday part of life? Is that something you've got to be careful with about how you introduce those ideas?
I think terminology makes a big difference. So, you know, you may say low mood, and it's looking at validating any feeling that the young person brings. It's also about saying that feelings can be transient, they can change. So because you don't feel great now, it doesn't mean you won't feel great tomorrow. And it's about them building their own resilience and understanding to be able to make changes. The Blues Programme is all about feelings, thoughts and actions and how they interact. So once the young person can understand how their actions have been caused because of the way they have been feeling and thinking, they're able to make the changes in order to change the end result.
And when you're dealing with people who are between the ages of 13 and 18, think back to your own times at that time, it's a difficult old time in life anyway, with hormones kicking in and everything that's resulted around, you know, exams and all that kind of thing as well. What are young people saying in regards to both those surveys and within the group sessions about the problems that they feel they are facing at the moment? Are there things which people of older generations could relate to, or are there also sort of new problems that they're having to deal with?
I think the obvious but new problems would be social media. It's the idea that you can, the grass is always greener. You can see an image of somebody that's not necessarily the image that is true. So there's that side which is new, but there's also a lot of positives to social media in order to support these kind of programmes, and again that peer-to-peer support, but otherwise a lot of it is stress. It's just day-to-day stress. It's exams, school exams, whether it be, and a lot of the stress comes from the young person themselves, and they put that pressure on themselves. There's a lot around comparing themselves to others. That seems to be a greater factor.
And when we talk about, when you mentioned the survey there that people filled in that flag up, you know, the type of person you might want to go through the Blues programme as well. What sort of things do you see from there? Do you see, you know, children who rate their self-esteem as zero, that rate their sort of mood as low, you know, that actually are aware that they are having a tough time of it from a mental health point of view?
Yes, we do. And you do get some of the questionnaires back. And the one for me is there's a question on loneliness. And any time somebody says they felt lonely all week, that to me is, you know, that's quite sad. And I think that's why the Blues programme is great, because once they come together and there's a kinship between them and the other 11 people on the group, you know, just that one question of loneliness, it doesn't feel as great as it was when they first did the first questionnaire.
And when you put them in the group, are they the same kind of groups that they'd be in for like a history or geography class? Or do you find that there may be different people who would otherwise mix in different circles, maybe different age groups?
We stick to year groups, just mainly because the programme itself, you need everyone to be on a similar level age-wise. However, it depends really. It depends on the school. There's some schools who, you know, it works better to put friendship groups together because there's already a support mechanism there. For other schools, they would avoid putting friendship groups together in order for the individual to be able to access the programme with a bit more autonomy of themselves rather than as part of a group, and they're making new relationships with other students within the year.
What does a sort of a graduate of the Blues programme come away with? What do you think sort of represents the fact that they've sat through the Blues programme, they've taken part in those sort of conversations as well, and they've come out the other side? What are they equipped with at that point?
The skills and the tools to be able to hopefully deal with whatever life throws at them, the coping mechanisms, the coping skills, they are about readdressing negative thinking. So when they do get a negative thought, they're thinking, what's the alternative to this thought? How can I change it? If it's true, what do I do?
I think one of the great things about the Blues and is about young people say that they have no control over their feelings. And through the programme, they begin to realise and discover they do. So the thoughts that come into the head, and that translates into a feeling. So it's catching their thoughts. So, you know, they may turn up for an exam. They haven't done very well. So they think they're absolutely rubbish. That makes them feel rubbish. So then they don't end up revising for the next exam. Then they go in and it's confirmed. So it's, as Rachel was saying, it's catching that thought. Okay, I didn't do very well this time. It might be because, I don't know, my dog died this morning, whatever it is. How can we change that? So the skills that are taught on the Blues is helping young people to catch their thoughts and letting them know that they have control over their feelings.
Do you get a sense, both of you, about the reasons why that young people might feel that way? That, you know, if they do badly in one exam, that they're going to do badly in all exams. Are there external pressures that are being put upon them? Are there things within the school environment maybe we might be able to change as well?
I think it's a big question, that, isn't it? Because each child is an individual, and in some schools it can be there's a lot of pressure, exam pressure for them to achieve. In other schools it might be that the child is seen as being disruptive. With other young people, it might be the home environment, they're not getting the support. In others, it could be they're absolutely, totally influenced by social media. Some could be being bullied. So there's a variety of reasons why.
I think as well, because as adults, sometimes we hand down terrible advice to young people, don't
yes.
we? Where we say, don't worry about it. Or you're being bullied. Or just ignore them.
Yeah.
Like, because as an adult, you're thinking, don't worry, there's a bigger picture in play here. Yeah. You'll be fine. You'll come out the other side. They'll be the ones who've got more problems than you. And you just need to ride it out. But actually, for a child going through that at that point, that exam, which is on the horizon that morning, that afternoon, probably feels like the everything.
Absolutely.
If there's bullying that's going on and it's happening through social media as well as within a classroom, that will be their entire life being caught up around these things. And sometimes as adults, we don't help ourselves, do we, in helping young people?
And I think some of the quote, I mean, in the Wirral, we've only been doing it since just before Christmas, and we've had one cohort of children go through, which about 127 children, but some of the quotes from them have been quite magnificent, and one of them was about being listened to the first time, being listened to, and what Rachel was referring to earlier, the unintended consequences of this programme is that the you know, young people come together and they might be in one class and another child might be in another, but they meet and they form friendships across the year, so it can reduce that feelings of isolation, make new friends.
It's actually echoing something which we're going to hear as part of part two of this week's programme. And it's interesting that on both sides of the water there, the same thing has emerged, that young people talk about the fact that they don't feel like they're a stakeholder in society, that they feel like the whole thing is happening and they've got sort of no place in it and they don't matter within it. Whereas, you know, if you've got kids of your own, you know they are the absolute most precious thing that exists on the planet as well. But they're getting to that age and they're thinking, hang on a minute, this doesn't really matter. Is that sort of because they're in those teenage years where they're crossing over into more adult environments and they're not yet to see their place in it, if you like?
And it could be. And I think we have to, and we understand that, you know, them teenage years are difficult years. You know, the hormones are kicking in. There is pressure on them about school and exams. And some of their feelings are normal. And it's about normalising it for these young people. You know, you may feel like that, but that's quite normal. You know, and give them the skills that when it tips over, how do we deal with that? When is it getting too difficult? When is it impacting on my day-to-day living? You know, when is my sleep being disturbed? When are my activities being stopped because I'm feeling like this?
It's a brilliant programme. And you've got, I was surprised by how many people you've spoken to in just a couple of months. 127.
It might be more
it's
now.
It's going to go up. It's about to go up. No, it's more than 100.
Yes, it's 123.
Oh, there we
young
go.
People
I
we
do
worked
apologize.
With. We worked with 123 young people in the space of 6 weeks. So that the grasp of that, you know, that is a lot of young people to be able to work with and facilitate a programme for in only 6 weeks. And that's only in 4 schools.
And are you able to say to those young people, look, these are skills which you can use at this particular moment, which might help you through, you know, this classroom environment, this exam environment or social issues that you're going with. But presumably those CBT skills you can be using, you know, when they're going for job interviews in later life as well. Is this a life skill that you're giving to these young people?
Yes. You know, personally, if I could give this to every young person, I would, as a toolbox for the future. When it comes to the issues they're dealing with, we ask them to bring examples. So for one school, primarily a lot will be around exam pressure. But for other schools, it'll be problems with friendships or problems at home. So there is a difference between the schools, and that's why we, even though the programme is ramp fidelity, it is ran exactly the same in every location so that the same results occur for each student. We ask them to personalise it by bringing what they want to bring to the sessions. So it's more likely that if they bring a common issue with them, then they will be given the skills to deal with that issue. And then it is transferable. The skills are transferable across most issues.
And do you find that when maybe they come up with an issue, that actually that's an issue which is related to a slightly different issue, and that maybe that's related to something else, that the thing that which is the straw that breaks the camel's back that makes somebody feel a particular way might actually be related to something else which is going on, which maybe young people don't have the power to kind of see when they don't have the wider picture?
Yes. But however, you know, how the programme works is, as we mentioned, it's thoughts, behaviours, feelings, and it's looking at the young person identifying that negative thought. So it doesn't matter what the situation is, it's the negative thought. And once they can identify the negative thought, which is the trigger to the feeling low in mood, they can stop it at the thought. They can think, what's the evidence to this negative thought? What's the alternative to this negative thought? If this negative thought's true, I have just failed my exam. You know, what can I do to change that for future? How do I make this not happen again? And, you know, by session 5, they are looking at future planning. What if I don't go to university? what could I do instead? And it's all about them making plans to try and look at plan A, plan B, plan C, to prepare themselves as much as possible. But the idea being is that structure of identifying the negative thought to change the feelings and then the behaviours, that can transfer to any issue.
We've got Rachel Ward with us on Mental Health Monday. Leslie Stopforth as well from Action for Children, the Blues programme. They're both service coordinators, and this is a scheme which is looking to reach 8,000, is that right?
Yep.
13 to 18-year-olds across the UK, and they're operating at schools in the Wirral at the moment. Leslie, I know you do work on both sides of the River Mersey as well.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be a boundary, and in your case at Action for Children, it isn't as well. You've got loads of great work that's going on. What else is happening at Action for Children?
I mean, Action for Children work with across the UK in 552 projects, and that ranges from adoption right to pre-birth assessments to mental health work. In Liverpool and Knowsley, as well as the good work we do in the Wirral, because we also run a counselling service in schools on the Wirral for one-to-one, but also in Liverpool and Knowsley, we run a scheme called the Junior Mentoring Scheme, which we've been running now for 10 years, and it's very much embedded in early intervention. And it's a different age group to what we're doing on the Wirral, because it's 5 to 11-year-olds.
5 to 11-year-olds?
5 to 11-year-olds. And it's a programme that we're really passionate about, and we champion it wherever we go. And the scheme is, we recruit and train volunteers from the local community. We give them 3 days training, ongoing supervision, and then we match them with a child who has been referred to us. Currently, our referral process has come from the schools. So the schools may identify that the child is at risk of not meeting their milestones. So it could be that educationally they're not going to achieve. It could be that they're at risk of becoming involved in gang crime, to find a way of being involved and making connections if there's difficulties at home. But we match them with a volunteer. The volunteer works with this child once a week for a period of 2 to 4 hours. It's outside of school and it's at weekends. And the 12-month intervention is first 3 months of getting to know the child, and the next 6 months they're working on goals. And it's very much, it's a very set programme. We have Fidelity with a model. It's a mentoring model that was developed by Chance UK in London in a response to the gang crime that was going up in London. The children who come on the programme, some can be the victims of bullying, some can be the perpetrators of bullying, some happen to be living in a household where there's some issues of neglect, some young people are just quiet, you know, and just not reaching their milestones. So we match them with a volunteer who works with them for the whole 12-month period. And at the end of it, we have a graduation where the volunteer, the adult volunteer and the mentor attend, and the Lord Mayor of Liverpool or the Mayor of Knowsley, and I have to get them correct, will award our volunteer and our young person and with a record of achievement and give them a certificate. It's just a fantastic programme. And over the 10 years, we've trained over 500 adult volunteers. So what we know is that there's 500 people out there who've had our training. And it's based on the CBT models, but it takes a more solution-focused approach. And what our aim is that when we work with these young people, and we do work with children as young as 5, that we give them the skills that they can use when we're no longer there.
So it's not just about a mentoring programme, but it's not just about, you know, trying to be a good role model. It's directly
absolutely
having conversations with that young person about what life is like, the choices that they make.
Yeah.
And how they can make those choices differently as well. I can almost see it. There's a film in that, isn't there?
Yeah. I mean, the way we look at it is a triangle, and we see it as a really strong triangle, because we have the child on the mentoring programme, we have some family support because some families need support, and then we have workshops, so solution-focused workshops for parents and carers, so they know the approaches that we're taking, because the child may be getting taught and our volunteer mentors are working in a way, you know, being very solution focused, what could we done differently, you know, scale and questions and all of that. But we're working with the parents, so they're doing the same thing.
That's a brilliant scheme. What do the parents think, or what's the parents' sort of interaction like with that volunteer throughout that period?
Do you know what? I mean, we've had really, really positive results, and I think our breakdown rate is, you know, we've 96%, so we've had a small breakdown rate. Sometimes, I mean, you can imagine as a parent, if a school decides your child needs a volunteer mentor, you know, some people are like, oh, what's that about? What does that say about me? And, you know, so we work really hard to support the parents and how we, there's a lot of work goes on at the very top end of this intervention. So what happens is a school will refer a child and we score them very much saying, yeah, because we want to work with the children who need us most. And then we go and meet the parent and we talk to the parent and we get the parent to fill in exactly the same questionnaire as the school have filled in. And we meet with the child and the child fills in the same questionnaire. So we're all, so we start that relationship from the very beginning.
The volunteers, are they people from all different types of walk of life? Is there a particular type of person you look for from a volunteering point of view?
No, there isn't. The type of person we look for, you know, obviously over 18, what we want is somebody who's got a design, a commitment to work with children, the motivation for doing it. Some people, we have a lot of student social workers who come on the programme. We've had barristers who've been volunteers for us. We've had a manager in a superstore. People who are retired and want to give something back. People who are looking for a career change. People who have moved into the area and want to link in with their local community.
And what do they get out of it?
Most of them say it's been quite life-changing, really. And also what they say is that they can have fun again. So they have a child between the ages of 5 and 11 and they can do things with them such as playing football, go in the park, go in the museum, go and abseiling, bit of horse riding. What is really, really popular is crabbing in New Brighton.
Oh, right.
Which surprises me. That is a real, people love to do that.
I tell you what, there are worse things to do with your leftover bacon. And go crabbing in New Brighton.
Yeah, so the volunteers get a lot out of it, you know, and we've got, and bear in mind it's a 12-month programme, and we've got one guy who's come back for the fourth time.
So they obviously seem to get a lot from it as well. It's almost like becoming a parent or grandparent without all the other bits.
Yeah.
Where you get the equivalent of the Saturday afternoon, where it's just the fun stuff as well, but making a huge difference as well to the young people's lives. In regard to both the Blues programme, which is obviously just starting out, but also the mentoring scheme as well, presumably for you guys, one of the key things is to be able to look at results. Won't be possible, I guess, with the Blues programme at the moment, but actually down the line, Leslie, that you can see those children who grow into young adults and then adults, and you're able to see the difference that you've been able to make to those lives and hoping that they're absolutely positive.
Yeah. I mean, and we've met some young people who've been on the programme. We've got a young person who was an ambassador. She's now 18 and she talks about the difference it made to her life. And we hear anecdotally through, because Liverpool's quite a small community, how well people have got on and the difference that it's made. So it's quite, I mean, I think being around for 10 years, we have that longevity.
Absolutely. Are you sort of open to volunteers?
We absolutely would love to have more volunteers.
And where do people need to go if they want to find out more information about that?
If they go onto Action for Children's website, they will see volunteering and you can find our programme. Or they can contact me at leslie.stopforth@actionforchildren.org.uk.
Brilliant stuff. The Action for Children website, by the way, if you just type that into any search engine, it comes up as the very first thing as well. You can follow the links there. Leslie, if there are parents listening to this who, both listening to that scheme, hearing about the Blues programme as well, and they're thinking, you know what, I could probably do with finding out a little bit more about this and getting a sense about whether or not my child might be able to benefit from such sort of programmes. You've got something on the website, Building Sound Minds. What will they find on there?
Building Sound Minds is a website which is designed for parents and carers, and it's for... We get a lot of information and bombarded through the media about young people and mental health and emotional well-being. And sometimes as parents thinking, well, is what my child's going through, is it normal? Do I need to be doing something about this? Is it just normal teenage behaviour? Have a look on there. It gives some really good tips and ideas of when you think you should intervene and how you can support your child to be emotionally well.
Building Sound Minds, you can find that link via the Action for Children website. Just type that into any search engine, you get all the details, and I'm sure details about the Blues programme as well. Leslie Stopforth, thank you for your time today. Thank you for coming on the show. Rachel, thank you for your time too. Best luck with the scheme as you continue to speak to many people on the Wirral. It's Mental Health Monday from Radio City Talk. We've got a couple of guests in the studio now who are going to talk about how the city is going to spend £2.5 million, which is arriving from the government. I'm very pleased to say we have Councillor Barry Kushner with us in the studio, Cabinet Member for Social Care. Tony Neiman is with us as well, who is a mental health promotion worker. Tony, Barry, thank you both for your time. Great to see you. Thanks for coming on to the show. When we talk about getting things right from a mental health point of view and dealing with our young people, Barry, there's a definite need out there, and actually we've seen a growing need within Liverpool schools.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think what we're facing is an epidemic of mental ill health amongst young people. You know, when public health tell us that 75% of mental health issues that adults face start when they're young people, and we only discover at least half, only about half of them, then if we want to try and head off problems later in life, then we've got to intervene much earlier when with children and young people.
I've got a figure here that says around 3% of the school population suffer as a result of poor mental health. That's a significant amount, isn't it, within a school in terms of the resources that might take? And if you look at numbers per classroom, even, that's a significant problem.
It is, and it's hard to... I mean, these are all ways estimates, aren't they? But and people, if you talk to young people, as we did when we were consulting about becoming a child-friendly city, UNICEF one, mental health is something that young people often talk about. But for myself, I mean, in the last year, personally, people have come to me with examples of 6, 7 young people in primary school who have been talking about taking their own life, which is absolutely shocking. These are children 7, 8, 9 years of age. I mean, you wouldn't think they have any understanding of mortality, let alone their own. But, yeah, we have to ask, what are we doing to our children to make them, to give them these sort of problems and these thoughts? It's worrying. So great that we've got some money coming in to replace what was cut 2 years ago, nearly. But, you know, we need to also think about what's causing it.
Let's bring Tony into the conversation, Tony Neiman. I guess, Tony, when you hear about these trailblazing cities, I guess you put your fingers, you cross your fingers, you think, let's hope at least that we can be part of it. Because although this trailblazing work will set a standard, there are plenty of parts of the country which don't get it. We have got it. So I guess it's up to people like you now to make this work and show that by investing this amount of cash, and it's a relatively small amount of cash when you look at the overall issue and the number of schools involved, that you can make a difference to young people's lives.
Definitely. As far as some of the figures that you were talking about before, we know that, you know, research is telling us that 1 in 10 young people are suffering with poor mental health, and that's right the way across the board. You know, our job is to get right in there and start right from an early age, as Barry was saying. You know, what we want to do is we want to prevent some of this stuff that's entering into the lives of adults. You know, I was at a university just a little while ago, and one of the students was shouting out, why haven't we had some of these strategies put into us? Because we don't know what to do with all of this. You know, we're turning to dangerous measures. So, you know, initially what we're looking to do, and we are doing it with some of our programs. We have a raw program for primary schools, and right now people are being trained up about it. And it's about people being aware of that, not just looking at behavior and giving consequences for that behaviour, but the big question of why is this behaviour going on?
Well, if we talk about 120 primary schools, 33 secondary schools and 12 special schools, 22 alternative education providers and Liverpool Community College who are going to benefit from this £2.5 million, you get a sense that that's a relatively small amount for that number of establishments. Tell us about then, if you can, Tony, what would happen in a primary school? How would that money sort of appear in the primary school in terms of the service provided? And then how would that differ to the service that might be provided through a secondary school? Because, of course, you're dealing with children at different levels, different areas of development as well, and I guess different problems that they might be facing.
Okay. All that I can tell you, as far as the trailblazer is concerned, we know that money is going to be coming in our direction. What I can tell you is what we're doing about it now and what we're hoping to increase and to put into those schools. So like I said, with primary schools, we're running a program called RAW, and that is all about, it's a whole school approach where schools are looking out for the best interests of their young people. So they're not just looking at their behaviour, they're looking at the reasons why that behaviour might be influenced. We also are involved in what's called the Now Festival. This has been running now for 4 years, and it's been highly successful, and young people themselves are putting their own perspectives in. They receive training from us, and then they produce their own live drama that's performed at the Epstein Theatre. So that's going to be going on from the 6th, 7th and 8th of February this year. And we're looking at what we call adverse childhood events. And again, that is something that it's about adversity that happens in your childhood that goes on to affect you as an adult. So again, what we're looking at is that preventative work. A lot of our work is based around resilience, and that becomes a massive strategy in some of the work that we're doing. So the difference between secondary and primary schools, you may well have heard of mental health first aid that's gone out to all the secondary schools. We have a massive part in that. So, you know, we've been responsible for training for all the secondary school staff. And we're also responsible for all the primary school staff using the ROAR programme as well.
So you're busy, and it seems like you're going to get busier, which it sounds like that's good news. Can I ask you about the word resilience? And Barry, you kind of hinted at it yourself as well, that, you know, resilience is a positive thing, that you have a resilience that when, you know, the world throws things at you, you have an ability to stand up to it. But at the same time, is there not something to be said for the overall environment that we create for young people? Why, as children, are they needing to face so many difficult things? What are those external factors? And can we maybe change some of them, which don't fall within this particular funding? They fall within examination. They fall within, you know, poverty. They fall within hunger. They fall within a million and one other things.
I mean, Tony mentioned the Adverse Childhood Experiences Programme, and the key element really around resilience there is the key closest adult in a child's life. So particularly if you're younger, if your parent or the carer is suffering, either they've got mental health issues or the substance misuse issues or whatever the issues are, if they're not there to be able to provide that support, children don't have that kind of that barrier between what they're experiencing and what they feel. And so you can't do that without, in a lot of cases, and we need to look at putting this in place too, in terms of working with children, we also have to look at working how we work with adults. So we've got to stop putting these programmes in silos and start thinking about how we do that at the same time, because that's a key element for building that resilience in young people.
Is that part of it, Tony? You know, you've got the CCG, the Clinical Commissioning Group, the CAMHS partnership, you've got the Young Persons Advisory Service on board as well, plus you've got those schools, and I guess with that, the sort of the institutions that come around the schools as well. Is that about that sort of whole approach, that it's about health, it's about education, it's about the school environment as well, which is more specific rather than just, you know, some random people show up, say, right, tick, there's mental health done, and then leave?
Yeah. The reason that so many agencies are involved, it's about having a collaborative approach so that we're all doing the same thing and we know what each other are doing. And you know, certainly with the Liverpool Learning Partnership, they've taken it on board, some of the training that's going on. They've coordinated it and made sure that every school has an opportunity where people are trained up so that we can all be saying the same thing. The ROAR Essentials programme is a whole school approach. It's not just about one person and having a bit of information and being able to pass that on to various young people that are in crisis. This is about, you know, where to go when things are really, really hard for young people. Are we all saying the same message? We're kind of like saying any door is the right door. So if it's through YPASS, if it's through ourselves at NYA, if it's through CAMHS at Alderhay, whoever it's with, that we're all giving the same message and that young person can receive the help that they need.
Just in terms of how this is dealt with now, Barry, Cabinet Friday the 11th of January.
Yeah.
So that will be approved, presumably.
Yeah.
And then these mental health teams, yeah, with a capital T, in place, fully operational by December 2019. So what will things look like then, do you think, in 2019 or from the start of next year, 2020, that a school could or how the school would interact, if you like, with one of these teams?
Well, we'll have those teams will be based on our sort of locality the way we break down our services into three localities across the city, so they'll be part of that. And as Tony was saying, you know, it's got to be part of a service that is integrated. So we've got already the White Pass Plus service, which is community-based, and there are hubs out in the community, like in Mablane Community Centre, in Belvale, in the old youth centre there. So that they're places where people can just, young people can just drop in. To this is kind of in between, working with children in school, but of course children don't just have mental health issues while they're in school, they're also going home and walking around the streets. To the clinical end of it, which is the CAMS service, which is in Alderhay Hospital. And there's got to be a link between all of them, because as Tony said, there can't be any wrong door. Wherever you come into it, you should feel you're part of a service, and that's what we need to achieve. So they'll be part of sort of early help teams and other support and advice, and hopefully I'm trying to get some mental health advice workers in those teams too, so that we can start to work with those adults as well that are obviously make it more difficult for children who are experiencing their own mental health issues.
Tony, can you give us an example? We speak more generally now. What sort of conversations do you have with young people at the moment? What sort of things might be, you know, flagged up by the work that you're doing both now and in the future as well? What are the themes, if you like, that people find themselves coming to people like you to discuss as a young person?
Well, some of the biggest problems are that I'm not heard, I'm not listened to. People don't regard what I've got to say as important. And it ranges right the way across. You know, I was talking to a young lady and she just like said, do you know what, I had a breakdown. And it's about understanding what do they mean by that. It's all about, you know, asking, what does that mean? You know, to you, what does that breakdown mean? What, yeah, well, actually, I couldn't do this and I couldn't do that. And it's just providing a place where young people can talk. A lot of young people are saying, you know, I just want to talk to people. We've had quite a number of opportunities where young people have had a voice in talking to some key changes in the system. And they've been saying, you know, what is it that young people want? They want relationship. They want to be spoken to and given respect. And they want an opportunity where they're really heard and they're heard for real. You know, one of the campaigns that went out was it went down to London was one of our young people turned around and said, "What's the point in you asking us all these questions? Are you really listening to us?" And that became their campaign. Are we really listening? So, you know, that is a real key question. But it's about young people feeling that their voice is being heard, it's being listened to, and, you know, things are being done in accordance to what they're saying as well. And again, you know, one of the things that I love about what we do is that it's all about that participation work that's going on. So with the Now Festival, it's about young people's interpretation of what is mental health to them and what the effects are in their lives, how does that affect them on a day-to-day basis? And it's not about the research that we as adults are pulling in or as professionals. It's about what the young people are saying, look, this is how it affects me, this is what I do. And then having that understanding and making sure it's passed on to the workforce, really.
And do they get it? Are they much better equipped than we are to sort of talk about mental health?
Young people, they are starting to. I can't say that they are. We're still on a journey. And one of the problems that we're faced with is the stigma. Why don't I say that I'm not feeling very well today? Because our society keeps us pinned down. You know, it's embarrassing, it's weak to turn around and say, you know, I'm not doing too good. And we need to change that. And because that is the stigma that keeps young people not talking about it. Now they're starting to say, actually, it's okay. If there was one thing that I could pass on to everybody is, how's your 1 to 10 today? So, you know, we often talk about, you know, how are you feeling from 1 to 10? 1 being really low, 10 being really high. Yeah, what's your 1 to 10? And it's just a really simple little statement. And basically, that's, how's your mental health doing? So, yeah, changes are going on. Young people are talking about it, but yeah, we need to address it more, and we need to make bigger changes, and we need to make it a safe environment for young people to go, do you know what, I'm not feeling good.
Thank you both for your time today. I look forward to hearing about the work that you're doing. Thank you both for your time. Councillor Barry Kushner, Cabinet Member for Social Care, Tony Neiman, who is a mental health promotion worker through NYA, Merseyside Youth Association.
Thanks for raising and bringing the attention to mental health, and particularly with young people in the city. It's really important. And you've done some great stuff with that. It's great. Thanks very much.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle
on Radio City Talk.